Most people in the United States know Billy Connolly's face in Scots-Irish brogue from the television sitcom Head of the Class and movies like Mrs. Brown, The Last Samurai, and Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. But in the United Kingdom, Billy Connolly is the great national comedian. He's also been a welder, an oil rigger, a Royal Army paratrooper, a folk singer, and, of course, a stand-up comic who prowls the stage.
My advice to you, if you want to lose a bit of weight, don't eat anything that comes in a bucket. Buckets are the kitchen utensils of the farmyard. There's nothing more discouraging than sitting waiting for your movie to come or somebody comes in with a big arm full of stuff and a bucket of Coca-Cola to go with it. Good mate, raining popcorn and butter. Can I have more butter in my bucket?
Billy Connolly is bringing his stage show to the States this month. It's called simply Billy Connolly Live. He joins us now from New York City. Thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Connolly.
Thank you very much, Scott. I've got a big smile on my face. I don't do that anymore, so it's like meeting an old friend.
You just prowl the stage and you start talking as if
I do, yeah.
So, but
oh, no, yeah. It's not. I don't go on with nothing, though. You know, I have a basic structure that I go on with. It changes all the time, the structure, you know. Mm-hmm. But I could do automatic pilot. If I didn't have any ideas, I could do stuff.
Is it true that you may swear more on stage than you do in ordinary private everyday life?
Pretty much, yeah, because I'm allowed to. And I swear rather well.
How do you swear well?
It has rhythm. You must stick to the rhythm of the words. If it doesn't have rhythm, it comes over uncomfortable to people. And usually middle-class people aren't so good at it as working-class people. I guess they're in company where they don't do it so often. But it should go... It should either go... Doot-doot. Doot-da-go-da-go-da-do. Da do da go boom da go da go da da go da ga da go go f- yourself, you know. Why don't you go and take a to yourself? Do da ga do da ga do ga da da. That should have rhythm.
Can we, for the umpteenth time, I'm sure for you, talk about your childhood a bit?
Yes, anything you like.
Well, because you know when with this old truism we toss off and say that many comedians have had unfortunate or sad, even tragic childhoods.
Yes.
That doesn't begin to cover the kind of childhood you had.
Yeah, it was pretty rotten.
And if I might state it just this bluntly for the benefit of our listeners, you had a mother who left you and a father who abused you and molested you.
Yes.
Well, how does that wind up in your routines? A lot of people wouldn't talk about that for the rest of their lives.
Yes, well... There are many ways to deal with awfulness that happens to you, like grief. Your mother dies, your father dies, your lover, your wife, your whatever dies. You're going to have to deal with it to stay alive. So all of these things you have to encapsulate and put in your mind in a place where you can access it when you want to, but ignore it when you want to. But let me tell you something else. Mm-hmm. I loved my father then, and I love him now. Yeah. Now, that I find people find hard to deal with.
Well,
he's dead now, you know, but I think of my father very fondly. I don't think of him as the guy who molested me. Forgiveness is like that. It's not just saying, I forgive you, there you go. You have to think it, too. Mm. You have to think, that was a rotten thing, and it was a rotten thing for you as well. To do, and it was, and you must feel rotten about it, but let's cut round that and get on, and that's what I did, and I went to see a shrink though, and he helped me, and I think it should be, more people should do that.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks it's horrendously expensive, but it needn't be. There are cheaper ones. Maybe they're not so good or something. I don't know.
Of course,
maybe get you deeper into.
You have the advantage of being married to a shrink, though, too, don't you? I
mean, yes,
you must get a family rate, at least.
Yeah, well, she specializes in sexuality, which is really weird, you know.
or really fortuitous, yes.
If you ever want to feel inadequate, marry a sex therapist.
Oh, gosh. I time. I'm sure she doesn't think of it that way.
She certainly does not, but she specializes in gender-crossing people, cross-gender, yeah. Transsexual, cross-gender. And you get to meet brilliant people. You know, she brings them to the house and everything. It was lovely. I remember she brought some people, and they were slave and master people. And they were such a jolly bunch, I couldn't believe it. And of course, you know, why not? Because they weren't actually doing it, you know. They were just having a cup of tea. And you never think of them having a cup of tea and a biscuit, you know. You think they're in leather all the time, beating seven colours or whatever out of each other.
You know, we listed some of the careers that you had before you became a performer. Mm. Yeah. And then, you know, this wasn't just like 3 months you were a welder. You were a welder from the age of 16 into your early
16
20s.
Till 23.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, you do a 5 years apprenticeship.
Yeah, that's a tough way to make a living.
It is, but it's very good. And it was also very good for comedy, because there was a lot of very funny men in the shipyard, and they weren't telling jokes, they were just being funny. When you had funny like that in the shipyards in Glasgow, they call you a patter merchant, you know, and it's a great thing to wear. You know, people say, he's a patter merchant. You people really respect you. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was generally regarded as that in the shipyard, I was very, very proud. I was as proud as I was when people in the newspaper said I was a good comedian.
You're a paratrooper.
Yeah.
Boy, but all I've read about your career as a paratrooper has to do with your performances in taverns, and I'm not sure we can recount them here.
Oh, yeah.
You had a special gift, didn't you?
Oh, yes, the dance of the flaming...
I guess that's how you'd put it, yes.
Yeah. You put a rolled-up newspaper in your anus, two of you, and you set them on fire, the papers, and then you dance, a kind of belly dance, and the one who pulls it out last is the winner. And your friends all go, da ra 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 ra, da ra 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 ra. You know, and there's hundreds of guys doing it. It's very, very funny.
I've read you were, was it 50 before you would turn the light off at night? Yeah, just
that's right. The dark and me didn't get along. And then I was thinking about it one day, and it came to me that everything that can eat you can see in the dark. Lions and snakes and I think it's a primal thing, fear of the dark. It's sitting at the fire and looking round at the darkness behind you.
Yeah.
If you've ever done that, the darkness is quite profound behind you. And I had a campfire in Scotland, and Eric Idle was with me. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting, because he plays guitar, and we have a good laugh. And we were sitting at the fire, and he says, you know, this is the most primal thing you can do, sitting at a fire. This is the most early human thing that you can actually do, that we know anything about. And he was talking about the light of the fire and the darkness and the world and its threat behind you, you know. And I think, of course, they were frightened of saber-tooth whatevers that were creeping around there. I think everything had saber-teeth in those days, you know. There was saber-toothed earthworms and saber-toothed ladybugs and saber-toothed daffodils, you know. The world was a much more violent place.
Yeah, and asteroids got rid of it.
Yeah, and I think fear of the dark is that. I think it's a primal thing, and it went away as easily as it came. And my house in Scotland, I was just thinking about this the other day, because my house in Scotland's a very big place. It's a baronial house, you know. It's where the lord of the manor would live. Mm-hmm. And people always, Americans particularly, always want to sleep in it. And so I let them in the morning. I say, how did you sleep? And they said, oh, wonderful. You know, the silence and the big thick walls and la, 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 la. And I say, oh, that's kind of odd. You know, people often complain of a presence in there that they don't understand. And, of course, I'm making the whole thing up. And they've come down the following morning saying, I felt that thing, this presence in the room. It's a woman's face, you know. And it's amazing what you can be talked into, isn't it? And the local guys, where'd you hear this? I was in the village and an old guy said, have you seen the dog yet? I said, I've got two dogs. He says, no, the one that haunts your house. And I said, it's a headless dog, he says, haunting your... Now, that's a really useless ghost, isn't it? Like, it can't bark, It can't see, it can't smell. I said it's probably in the cellar, creeping, trying to work out how to get out of there.
I just want to wind up with a couple of things. You opened May 9th in New York City.
Yes.
Are you, God forbid, rehearsing? Do you know how you're going to begin?
No, I don't rehearse. Mm-hmm. I don't rehearse at all. And I teach my sound man how to do the sound check, so I don't have to do that either. I just go on and get on with it.
So you don't know now how you're going to begin?
No. The funniest thing about being solo is you just can't rehearse. You can't be funny with no audience in the room. Mm-hmm. And look at when you, and if you rehearse in a mirror, you're looking the wrong way. So there's not. It's the same as my theory about critics. They're all looking the wrong way. You know, they shouldn't be looking at you know, the performer. They should be looking at the audience to see the effect he has on them.
Yeah.
You know, he's not there to tell you whether the guy's good or not. That's a given. That's why there's 3,000 people sitting there with tickets. He's supposed to look at the effect you're having on the audience, not on his sensitivities or his wasted life. You know, overweight, drunk and bore.
Yeah, I know you have great respect for critics.
Oh, I love critics. Yes. They should be interfered with and burned.
Mr. Connolly, it's been a delight talking to you.
Oh, the pleasure's mine, Scott. It's been a real delight.
Billy Connolly Live runs for 20 performances in New York City beginning May 9th. For a longer excerpt of this conversation, come to our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Blip, blip. Blip, blip.